It wasn't a very big role, but what that did was it allowed for me to hear the information again for a second time. And it allowed for me to hear it at a different level. And that's when I really realized, you know, the most dangerous words on the planet are, I've heard that before.
Welcome to the Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, where you get multifamily investing made real. Learn from top players in the real estate investment world as they share their secrets with you and discover proven strategies on apartment investing that actually work. To learn more about Wheelbarrow Profits, visit jakeandgino.com, your one-stop shop for everything multifamily. Now to your hosts, Jake and Gino.
Welcome to the Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast. My name is Gino Barbaro, co-founder of Jake and Gino, multifamily investor, educator, father, mentor, and I am joined by my co-host, my brosif, Joshua Ryan Rusin, community director at Jake and Gino. Josh, how are you doing today, bro?
Gino, doing well, man. Rent collections are still coming in strong. The country slowly opened up. Very excited to get back to live events with the Jake and Gino community. In fact, we got two scheduled for July, a money mixer and a boot camp. Gino, what are you excited about?
Well, I'm really excited about today's guest for a couple of reasons. I heard a little bit about his story by mistake. I love the progression of personal development, and I want to tie it into leadership, into investing in multifamily, because I think the problem that everyone has with real estate is they just think it's an asset and you invest in it. But the beauty about multifamily is you can actually scale up and create a business and become a leader. Let's dive in today, Josh, about extreme ownership, about what makes a leader powerful, about having that responsibility, about how to create systems and how to create a culture within your organization. I think, you know, our guest is going to really dive into it. So, Josh, without further ado, introduce the guest.
All right. So today's guest is Chris Robinson. Chris is a founding partner of the John Maxwell team and newly appointed executive vice president of Maxwell Entrepreneur Solutions. But more importantly, he's the father of 11-year-old triplets, a 7-year-old, and 3.5-year-old twin girls. Without further ado, welcome to the show, Chris.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on today, guys. Great to be here with you.
Of course. All right. So Chris, I want to dive right into your story. How did you get into the John Maxwell team, personal development, leadership coaching, all of that?
Yeah. So, you know, it started out many years ago, I want to say about 17 years ago, where I was a salesperson with an organization and was looking for how can I stand out as an employee. And I ended up taking a course that was being offered by the church I was attending at that time. And they were offering this course by John Maxwell, the 21 Laws of Leadership. Now, this was a course where I would go inside the classroom each and every single week and watch John on a VHS. And, you know, every single week I'd watch the VHS. I'd go back into the workplace. I would apply the principles and continue to grow inside that role. Now, eventually, they asked me, you know, if I'd like to be the facilitator. And I said, of course, I'd love to be the facilitator. And I said, what does that consist of? They said, well, when you come in the classroom, press play. When you're done, turn off the lights. And that was it. Now, it wasn't a very big role, but what that did was it allowed for me to hear the information again for a second time. And it allowed for me to hear it at a different level. And that's when I really realized, you know, the most dangerous words on the planet are, I've heard that before. And that's when I began to make a shift in my learning. You know, what that also allowed for me to do was to grow on my job and in my current role and allow for me to really see that, hey, I could develop people. And I began to take that a little bit more seriously in the workplace, which led me to attending more conferences, more events, and eventually, you know, hopping on a phone call with John Maxwell as he offered certification for the first time in March of 2011. I joined in March of 2011 to become a coach, speaker, and trainer. You know, I built a business utilizing the tools and systems that the John Maxwell team supplied and provided. Then I just began to really plug into the team and, you know, become part of their president's advisory council, became the first faculty member, first faculty president, and now being the leader and the, you know, executive vice president of the John Maxwell team. So tremendous journey from press and play on VHS, that's for sure.
For those of you who don't know what a VHS is, that's too bad. You're just missing it. You know, I mean, you have to send it back. When you bring it back to Blockbuster, you got to rewind the tape. You know what I'm saying? That's all I'm saying about that. So, Chris, you talked about the 21 irrefutable laws. Can you just go over a couple? What are the couple ones that really have impacted you and really, you know, stand out and helped you out?
Yeah. You know, the first law is the law of the lid. It says that your leadership your organization will never go beyond your leadership abilities. Let's just say, for example, that, you know, Josh is a five leader. He's a five on a scale of 1 to 10. What that's saying is that the organization will never go beyond a five. Mm-hmm. But if Josh can raise his leadership ability to a 7 or 8, well, then now the capacity for the organization will grow overall. So oftentimes we see people say, well, my employees won't do this or my employees won't do that. Well, it's not about what the employees are. It's about your ability to grow and develop as a leader. So as you grow, the employees grow. As you grow, the organization grows. And so that was critical for me, you know, by going into leadership positions, knowing that, hey, they're only going to run as high as my capacity. And so I've got to take responsibility for myself to grow in order for my organization to grow. So
I love that.
The first one there. Yeah, that's for sure.
So for me, I need to pontificate a second, Josh. The problem nowadays is there's a lot of ego going on, right? And you can look at our political leaders and it's all gotcha. Our media's gotcha. This is gotcha. So it's really hard for a leader to go out there and say, I made a mistake or I need help or getting information from others, right? Because that looks as a sign of weakness. Whereas in reality, it's to me a sign of strength because I don't know everything. And everyone who thinks they're an expert, they don't know. So we need to get information and filter. So those of you out there who are looking to become a leader of an organization, it's okay to say, what do you think about that? And assess information from everybody else. And that's really important. You know, before we go into a couple of the laws, how do you go about raising your leadership? You're saying Josh is a five. Josh, how does Josh go from a 5 to a 7 and then from a 7 to a 10?
Yeah. So, you know, it's leadership is a learnable skill, you know, but I do, you said something great there, you know, that I really think people need to get a hold of, and that, you know, today leadership isn't about, in the past, it was about, you know, that position or title and perfection leadership. Today, mm-hmm. leadership is really about, you know, being genuine and transparent. Mm-hmm. So now more than ever, I believe people want a leader that can admit, yeah, I was wrong. Yeah, I don't know that. You know, I just literally got off a meeting with my team and, you know, they've asked several questions. And my answer was simply, hey, I don't know that. We got to find out about that. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think about that? And going more into collaborative leadership in today's world versus I'm the boss, I'm the leader, I know what's going on, but actually valuing people's opinions will go a very long way.
I love that.
You know, so I wholeheartedly agree with you, you know, in your thought process about that in today's leadership. But answering the question, how does Josh grow as a leader? You know, well, there's a couple different ways to grow. In order to grow in any area, now this goes for multifamily investing, this goes for, you know, leadership, this goes for your family. In order to grow in any area, you need three things. You need knowledge, you need experience, and you need coaching or mentorship. You need knowledge, you need experience, you need coaching or mentorship. Doesn't matter what you want to grow in, you need those three things in order to grow in any area that you want in life. So you can say, hey, I want to lose weight. Well, you need knowledge. You need experience, meaning you have to do something and you need some coaching. You want to grow in multifamily. Look, you know, I can tell you one of the first books that I bought in multifamily was your book, Wheelbarrow Profits. Okay. Why? Because I needed knowledge, right? I need experience. I need to actually go out and do something, not just reading the book, but applying the knowledge. And I needed coaching. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I wanted to get around other people that were doing what it is that I wanted to achieve. And so, you know, if you want to grow as a leader, those are the three simple things, ingredients that you need in order to grow as a leader.
I love that. I need to piggyback off a couple of those things, Chris. First thing is education times action equals results. We always talk about that. And it's Josh's favorite saying. It's either pay to play or seek to serve. It's either one of those two, right? And people always think about your education as an expense. It's an investment. Classify that as an asset. Now, one thing that I'm reading right now, the Extreme Ownership book by Jocko, which really struck me. I think people want autonomy. I think that's what a great leader does. He gives people the autonomy to grow. But one thing that's, I think, different leadership today as it was 20 or 30 years ago, you can't be the authoritarian leader unless you want to be a Saddam Hussein where you just chop everybody off. You're not really a leader. You're a dictator, right? But I think the leader's main message is to try to convey to the team members that what's the job? And if the team members aren't bought into the mission, it's not going to happen. Or if they have any questions, it's not going to happen. So can you just go over that, how a leader can convey to that? And ultimately, if the mission fails, it's the leader's responsibility. And nowadays, leaders aren't taking responsibility for errors. They're castigating and casting blame to others.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is the leadership's responsibility. And, you know, when we take a look at people buying into the mission, you know, what we have to say is that it's the law of the buy-in is that people have to buy into the leader before they buy into the vision. Mm-hmm. Right. So if I don't believe in Josh, we're just picking on Josh today, right? You know, Josh is that level two leader. I don't believe in Josh, right? I'm mm-hmm. not going to believe in that vision. So two things happen in that particular case. You know, either one, if there's not a strong buy-in for the vision, they go look for another leader, or they go look for another organization, or if they have a strong buy-in for the leader, they say, hey, I love Josh and, you know, I want to support him. Well, then what they'll try to do is they'll try to change that vision. Okay. They'll come and say, hey, you know, they'll give feedback on that. But here's what when we're talking about buy-in and we're talking about that, you know, I want you to understand, and to all the listeners out there, followers are asking three questions. Now, they'll never ask you these three questions, but I want you to ask yourself these three questions and think about anything that you've ever quit. Whether it's a relationship, whether it's a job, what happened was one or more of these were violated. Followers ask three questions. Can I trust you? Do you care for me? And can you help me? Can I trust you? Do you care for me? And can you help me? Now, if one or more of those have been violated, okay, you're going to lose the follower. We go off and we do something different. And so that takes away, no matter how great the vision is, if I feel like I can't trust the leader, I'm leaving. If I feel like that leader can't help me, I'm leaving. If I feel like that leader doesn't care about me, I'm leaving. And so mm-hmm. as a leader, if we do anything, we've got to answer a resounding yes to those three questions. And that'll get them to buy into the vision and move forward as a team.
That's great. So all you syndicators out there and people raising capital, when you're talking to investors, that's, I want to call it the three pillars, right? I've got the three pillars, knowledge, experience, and coaching / mentoring. We'll talk about that later. But those three pillars, if you're an investor and you're looking at a syndicator, the questions that the investor is going to ask the person raising the capital, can I trust you? Might be, I don't know. Are they fully transparent? Are they doing webinars? Are they talking about what's going on with collections? The second one, do you care for me? Obviously, as a syndicator, you need to care for your investors because you're their fiduciary. You're taking their money. And one of the ways I care for my investors is I put my own skin in the game. I put my own capital in there and I'm working as hard as possible. And we're vertically integrated, which means we're running our own properties. And can I help the investor? My job to help the investors to try to get a return of capital to them, right? So if you can focus on those three, it will really help your ability to raise capital, and it'll help your ability to have the go-giver mentality where you're actually helping others before you're helping yourself. And we have something that we use in Jake and Gino. It's called the SPY technique. It's called the seller, the property, and you. So when you're analyzing a deal, it's in the same way. You're analyzing the other side, trying to create value to the other side. If the other side is motivated and they have a problem you can solve, great. Then you move to the property. Okay, is there something wrong with the property that I can figure out? Is there a value add? Is the property a little bit older? Can I you know, work on it? And then ultimately, it's you. You're the last person. So on these questions, it seems like it's you're the last person. It's not about you. It's about you helping the other side. Does that make sense, Chris?
Yeah, absolutely. That absolutely makes sense. And that runs right in line with it. So mm-hmm. we're
going here. I love that. So give me a couple more laws of leadership that really have impacted your life.
Yeah. So when I think about another law of leadership that really has impacted my life would be a law of priorities, And I think this is really big for investors. You know, law of priorities says that, you know, busyness does not equal productiveness. Okay. And so what I see a lot of people doing, especially in the real estate investment world, is that we get busy. We get busy, you know, going down that one vein of, oh, well, I'm learning, but they're not necessarily producing anything. So what I want to encourage people to do from the law of priorities is stop asking yourself, what am I doing, but what am I accomplishing? Mm-hmm. Not what am I doing, but what am I accomplishing? And, you know, now you begin to get more productive in your life because you're looking at what you're doing. So you could be busy doing a lot of things. You know, I look around my office here and, you know, we can begin to organize. Well, once I get this organized, then I'll do it. Right. But didn't accomplish anything. Mm-hmm. All right. So look at the income producing activities, look at your activities and prioritize them based upon what you're accomplishing, not what you're doing. And I think that helps out a ton as a leader.
So I can give everybody a story about myself. I'm at the restaurant, washing dishes. I'm busy, hard work, but it's not challenging. I'm not generating revenue from that. And it's a minimum activity minimum wage activity job where I'm saying to myself, tricking myself, I'm doing work, but am I being productive? Am I growing the business? And every now and again, it's okay to jump in the weeds and get down and dirty because you have to, you know, an employee's missing and you have to step in. That's not what we're talking about. But if you're constantly going to those not generating revenue, you're not being a leader. You're just being an employee. If you can find somebody to work with that, I think that's what you need to do. And that's what ultimately happened to me. I was like, wow, I'm doing all this work and I'm not really producing anything. I'm just doing minimum wage work where I can find somebody else. So that's a really, the law of the lid is first, the priorities is number two. I love that. You mind sharing another one that really impacted you?
Yeah. I would go with the law of navigation. The law of navigation says that anyone can steer a ship, but it takes a leader to chart a course. Mm-hmm. And really what this chapter and what that book talks about is really planning ahead, you know, so really taking a look at the overall vision of where are you going and taking time to make sure that your actions and your vision line up. You know, I see it all the time with people is they say that they want one thing, but their activities say something completely different. You know, I think about one of my middle triplet, Brex. You know, I had made this decision that I was going to begin to eat a little bit healthier. And, you know, I tell them and declare them that I'm going to eat a little bit healthier. And, you know, shortly after playing some golf with Brex, we go to the grocery store. And, you know, he says to me, he says, Dad, I goes, I noticed you're eating a little bit healthier. Did Mom make you do that? And I said, no, man, I just want to live a little bit longer life. And, you know, we're walking through the store. I'm picking up all the healthy stuff. And in the middle of it, I stop and I said, hey, do you want those donuts for breakfast? He says, wait a minute. He goes, you were literally just talking about eating healthy and you're asking me if I want donuts. What was he saying? My attitude and my actions didn't line up. Mm-hmm. And so many times people say that they want one thing. We say that we want to go someplace as a leader, but then our actions dictate something else. And so the law of navigation is really making sure that we get our attitude and our actions and our everything lined up. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people on the line, you know, they'll listen today, say, hey, they want to invest. They want to invest, but hey, their actions say that they don't, because they want to go out and they want to buy the frivolous thing. They want to go out and they want to do the entertainment. They want to go out. They don't want to make those changes. And so, mm-hmm. you know, that law of navigation really lets us line up our attitude and our actions.
So Chris, would you say that it's very similar to Robert Cialdini's influence in one of his influence pillars, where he talks about commitment and consistency. If you commit to something, when you're committing to something, you have to be consistent to that. And that's what people who are successful, or that's how we've evolved as humans, is we really commit to something where I have this meeting at 5 o'clock. And as we get older, the more commitments we make, the more likely we're to stand by that. And that's what sales people try to do. They try to get a prospect to commit to something. Like we can talk about, hey, is multifamily the vehicle? Yeah, it is. Well, okay, you've committed to it. Now you need to be consistent with your actions. So that's really, I just triggered something. Yeah. That's a really cool thing with navigation. I love that a lot. That's excellent.
Absolutely. Yeah, and consistency is key. I mean, and that's the thing, is that consistency is more important than intensity. Mm-hmm. You know, I would rather someone do something consistently every single day that ends in day versus, hey, you know what? I'm going to spend, you know, all of Monday and then hope for everything else to happen this week. And so we have to be consistent in anything that we're doing.
Do you have any tips on being consistent? Because for me, it's, you know, you start a habit off and you want to continue with that habit. And, you know, it can be difficult for a lot of people because they're just routines, and habits are really just shortcut ways to shortcut your life and become more efficient. Are there any ways for you to tell people, hey, this is a trick that I've used to stay consistent or just to get my actions or process to continue?
Yeah. So the main thing with that is starting small. Mm-hmm. I think too many people overcommit on mm-hmm. things that they want to change, and they neglect, you know, the starting small. Mm-hmm. And so the best way that I've found to develop a habit is just start small and do it every day. Every day that ends in day, you do it. So if a person is wanting to commit to reading more books, okay, they're wanting to commit to consuming more information, what they typically try to do is they say, hey, I want to start my morning off and I want to sit on my porch and have a cup of coffee, watch the sunrise, and I'm going to do this hour of, you know, personal growth. Hey, look, if you're not doing that, you don't need to start there. You need to start with, hey, can I do 5 minutes? Can I start my day off with 5 minutes mm-hmm. and do 5 minutes consistently every day for 10 days? And then, hey, can you do 10 minutes? Can you do 10 minutes every day for 10 days? And then scale your way up. It's just like going to the gym and, you know, wanting to do an hour long workout and you haven't been in there in a decade. Right? Mm-hmm. It just doesn't work. You're not going to develop the habit. So start small and start every single day if you want to develop more consistency.
I like that. I had asked you previously, you know, how has leadership changed over the last 20, 30 years in your mind? I see that leaders, you know, you can look back at, let's say, Giuliani back in, you know, 9/11. He was really an amazing leader. He was out there, visible. He really took action. He really didn't blame anybody. It seemed as if, right? Everybody coalesced around him, right? So what have you seen different in the last 20, 30 years in leadership?
Well, again, I think it goes back to more transparency and leadership. I think that we're getting away from more hardline iron fist leadership, especially inside the workplace. I can think about, you know, just the sales environments that I was in, you know, 15, 16 years ago, where it was, you know, coffees for closures, and every single day you're getting cussed out, you're getting yelled at, you're getting berated, you know, because your numbers aren't there. And that just doesn't fly today. You know, so what I'm seeing today inside of organizations is more people first leadership. I'm seeing more collaboration leadership and more, you know, growth inside of leaders. There's actually a seeking of knowledge versus just, I've got the title, I've got the position, I'm the boss now, and I've made it. So I'm seeing more leaders grow beyond their position these days. And so, you know, I hope that that's the trend, because that's the only way that we're going to grow and evolve overall as leadership, is that we choose to continuously grow. It's not a destination.
So, Chris, for me, let me ask you this. You might not be able to answer this question, but the generations, are they different to lead? Because I'm sure the millennials have a different mindset. I think millennials might be harder to lead, but I think they also have vision. They want to be part of something, whereas my generation just was going to work to get a paycheck, and they just had to work hard. So is there a different style of leadership for all the generations, or do you think?
No, I mean, I think that you can say that, but I don't think that the millennials are harder to lead. They just have a different vision of what it is that they want. And so it all comes back to, you know, going back to people first. Even in, you know, your generation was saying, hey, we just came to work for a paycheck. Same thing there, but we've got to connect. Hey, why is a person coming to work? Why is everybody's trading their life for something? So every single person is deciding to trade their life for something. They're not coming into the work because they love the company. They're coming to work because they want a house. They want to send their kids to a school. They want some car. They're coming because they want this stuff. And so we've got to figure out, hey, why is Josh coming to work? It's not because he loves to come to work. Okay. It's because he's trying to achieve something. And so when we connect to that person's dream, their goal, their vision, whether they're a millennial, whether they're a baby boomer, whether they're generations, it doesn't matter. We've got to figure out what they want and how we can help them get that. That's how we work with the different generations.
I love that. It's a spy technique. It's just like real estate, right? You're worrying about what the seller or what your employee wants. It's always thinking about how to serve them. And if you can serve them really well, they're going to buy into the vision and they're going to come into work. And that is awesome. I really like that. That is excellent. One more law before we get into the short answer questions.
One more law. So where we go?
We've got LID, priorities, navigation. I got to write this stuff down, Chris, because I'm a voracious note taker, because it goes in one ear and out the other. The way I learn is just by repetition.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So let me give you one more law that I would go with in the 21 laws. You know, I think if we go bigger picture, law of legacy. And the reason with this one is because, you know, I think that we're more mission-based leaders, you know, during this time. And I think that as leaders and, you know, for the whole, what I'm saying is that we're thinking beyond the everyday, you know. And this chapter really talks about, you know, getting leadership to live beyond your time frame, you know. So what we're trying to do with the John Maxwell team is not just build a legacy for John during the next 10 years, 20 years, but how do we get our legacy to live beyond the next 100 years? Okay. Mm-hmm. And when Jake and Gino are not alive, how do you continue to equip and resource real estate investors and looking beyond, you know, the business, looking beyond the building, you know, as I look at the signs behind you, like, we want to be looking at how can we see those for the next 100 years? How can you guys continue to impact investors? So that law of legacy is just really talking about, you know, hey, how do we live beyond where we're at? And so that one really stretched me. And I think the bottom line of that one is, if you had to write one sentence about your life, what would it be? And, you know, for me, it's that, you know, my life was changed as a result of Chris by the life that he lived and the lessons that he taught. Okay. So being an example and teaching and sharing with others is what I would love for people to say at my funeral when I die one day. Is mm-hmm. had a positive impact on me and my direction changed as by the life that he lived and the lessons that he taught. Mm-hmm. So what's your legacy?
I like that. Let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsors.
Gino, I know a lot of our listeners are wanting to take their multifamily investing business to the next level. I know that you've been hard at work helping Jake and Gino students do just that using our framework. Can you explain to the listeners how they can get our help?
Guys, we've been hard at work growing our community of like-minded investors, and the results of our members has been nothing short of.
All right, Chris, I got some short answer questions here for you and a couple things actually I want to dive into. So you also invest in real estate. In fact, you own some multifamily. As leadership and coaching is your primary, you know, function, why did you decide to get into real estate?
Yeah, well, real estate, if you look at, you know, how wealth is built overall, I mean, real estate is always there. Like it's there's no way around it. You're either going to invest in stocks, you're going to invest in a business, you're going to invest in real estate. And I knew that real estate was a vehicle for me. So I knew that, hey, look, if that's the direction that where wealth is at, that's where I want to be. So that's why I began investing in multifamily.
Love it. Now, let's say I'm a new leader, right? I'm a level 2 leader. What first steps would you recommend for someone to progress in their leadership journey?
Yeah, the first thing is I would begin to read. You know, one of the best pieces of advice that I was given by a billionaire, was, you know, I sat down at the table and I said, what's one thing that would make the greatest impact in my life? And he said, read. Now I paused and I thought, okay, yeah, that's great. I can read. But he says, what happens, he goes, I was a literate bricklayer at the age of 27. When I had lunch with this billionaire, he was 75. He attributed his billions of dollars to reading over 5,000 books in his lifetime. You know, right now we have access to more information than any generation that's ever lived. And so the first thing that I would tell someone to do if they want to be a leader is begin to read.
So not all leaders are readers, but all readers are leaders. That's what Josh shared with me. He said he heard that from a wise man once.
That's right.
I got a good question for you too, a follow-up on that. So basically we are in the information age, right? And there's no shortage of information. How do you determine what's the right information out there?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And that's part of the double-edged sword of where we live today. We do have access to all the information that we could possibly need, but today it's about filtering the information that you need. And so for me, I'm very specific in what I read, and it goes back to the consistency question. So if I have a topic or area that I want to learn in, well, my only books that I'll read will be on that specific topic. So how I got into multifamily was, hey, I had an interest in multifamily. I knew that I needed information. So for, you know, 3 months, the only books that I read were in multifamily. No other books. I wasn't reading any leadership books. I wasn't reading any sales books. I wasn't reading any marketing book. It was just multifamily books for those, you know, 3-4 months that I want to get into it. Then I knew that I needed coaching. Okay. And I began to get involved in some programs there. Then I need to get some experience. I got around some other people that were going out doing tours, things of that nature. And we began to look into things and I found myself in a position to do a deal. You know, so it's following the things that we talked about here today.
Love that. All right. So what is your favorite book? And serious question, how many books do you think you've read?
Oh my goodness. Well, I know at this point, I would say probably around 1,500 books. So I'm behind John by about 9,500. In that, and the other day I was watching a webinar with him and he's like, you know, I've read over 10,000 books in my life. I'm just put my head down. I go, oh my goodness, I got some work to do. But there's 5 books that I read every year that do go into my rotation. 5 books that I read every year. One is The Greatest Salesman in the World by Og Mandino. 2 is 12 Pillars by Jim Rohn. I love that book. And then I do 15 Laws of Growth by John Maxwell, 21 Laws of Leadership, and then Think and Grow Rich. Those 5 go into the rotation every single year.
Love it. What about your best habit for success and why?
Best habit for success, is again, I think that I've shared that is, you know, doing those 3 things. Get reading on the areas that you want to grow. Getting around people that are doing what it is that you want to do, moving in the direction that you want to move in, and then actually doing something about it. You know, I think, you shared earlier 2 ways to get mentors in your life and to get around the people in your life is seek to serve. How can you add value to those that you want to learn from, or pay to play? You've got to invest in yourself to be around and get in the room with other people that are moving in the direction that you want to go.
Love it. All right. So there've been a ton of golden nuggets in here. And really my biggest takeaway is your income and your growth in life never really exceeds your level of personal development. Gina, what do you have to add to that?
So the first thing is I'm going to give Chris a little trademark he should use. The three pillars of leadership growth, right? The first one is knowledge. Yeah. The second one is experience. And the third one he mentioned is coaching or mentorship. And I'd like to add to that, the reason why the third one is super important, we didn't really mention it, but we really should. It's about the accountability. It's not so much as the coaching aspect of it that Chris is going to teach me to be a leader, but he's going to hold me accountable to actually going through and doing the work and assigning the work and getting on every couple of weeks or whenever and fulfilling what I'm supposed to do. Because when I'm by myself on an island, I'm more likely to say, you know what, I'm not going to get to it today. I'm going to get to it tomorrow. But if you know what, I'm going to get a call with Chris and I've got to pay Chris, I want my money's worth. So I'm more willing to do something for Chris than I am for myself. So that accountability piece is really important. So once again, knowledge, experience, and coaching or mentorship are those three pillars of leadership growth. And the three reasons why people fall off, why your followers don't follow you, this is really important. Those three questions, everybody write this down. Can I trust you? Do you care for me? And can I help you? Those are really important, Josh. If you can get yes to those questions, if your followers will follow you, if you're actually transparent and all. And as far as leadership, I mean, those books that Chris had mentioned, I definitely think everybody should read all those books. I haven't read Og Mandino's book yet, but I've read all the other ones. And I think Napoleon Hill is a great book for everybody to read. It just gets you in the right mindset. And I think the other thing, Josh, is we're all constantly learning and growing. It's not one of these things in life where you just stop and you're like, okay, I've reached the peak. You're constantly, when you get to that peak, it's like there's another peak there. And then there's another peak there. It's just constantly learning and revising and having that experience in life, and that life experience will really help leaders grow. So.
Love it. Chris, how can the listeners get a hold of you?
Yeah. You know, listeners can get a hold of me at r3-coaching.com or check out johnmaxwellteam.com. Got it.
Well, listen, Chris, I want to thank you for being an amazing guest of the show and sharing your story here. Gino, you got any wise words to send us off?
I think everybody needs to be a leader, whether you're a leader of an organization, whether you're a leader of your family. I did a Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters podcast on the multifamily zone. I think you should all check that out because I think the lack of leadership in the household is prevalent nowadays. We're talking about pandemics, right, Josh? The pandemic I see is that fathers aren't there. They're not leading their families. They're not the authority figures, right? A hero, the definition to me of a hero is somebody doing the right thing, even in the midst of anguish. And that's a definition of a leader too. People may not see what's going on, but if the leader can convey the mission and can lead the team, it's not about him. It's not about his ego. It's about getting the job done and getting the mission done. And that's what fathers should do also out there. So I'm hating on fathers because I'm a dad right now and I'm holding all the fathers out there accountable. They might be listening to this and going, you know what? I haven't spent enough time with my kids. You make the choice. You're the one who's responsible. There's nothing else. We all working hard. I have six kids. I work multiple hours. Josh is pushing me every day. He's cracking a whip, right? So for me, I've got to find the time. I can't blame Josh for not spending time with my kids. I have to carve out that time. So for me, the leadership comes in so many different facets and so many different entities, whether it's the household, the family, government, private entity. It's all about the same thing. It's all about extracting your ego and working on the mission and leading and taking ultimate responsibility.
Boom. Well, with that one, we'll see you on the next episode, guys. See you, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
We trust that you enjoy the Wheelbarrow Profits podcast. Visit jakeandgino.com, your one-stop shop for everything multifamily. See you next time when Jake and Gino share more of their investing secrets with you.